Hello and welcome to the Conservation Connection Show. This is brought to you by Valley Stewardship Network here in Viroqua, Wisconsin. And I'm Beth Summers, the Executive Director of Valley Stewardship Network. And here in the studio today, I'm excited to have Melinda Knutson, who is the President of the Cooley Region Chapter of the Prairie Enthusiasts. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And today, Melinda's going to be talking to us about rewilding your yard. So how people who live in town can put native plantings into their yard and some of the benefits of doing that and why people might want to consider that. Valley Stewardship Network has worked quite a bit with landowners that have larger parcels of land to put in prairie strips in amongst their crops or larger prairie plantings, but it's actually also beneficial for people with small yards that there are reasons why they might want to also consider native plantings.
That's right.
Melinda, I was hoping maybe you could start us off just by talking a little bit about the organization you're coming from, the Prairie Enthusiasts, and what kind of work they do, and who are the Prairie Enthusiasts?
The Prairie Enthusiasts are enthusiastic about prairies. I think originally it started with some landowners and some people that took an interest in remnant prairies, prairies that have never been plowed. And all of the interesting plants and animals that live in those prairies. And they kind of got together and decided to create an organization. I'm with the Cooley Region chapter, so we have several chapters. I'm not sure exactly how many, but we have chapters in large parts of Wisconsin, eastern parts of Minnesota, and one or two counties in Illinois. And right now, basically in those chapters, we do restoration of primarily remnant prairies, prairies that have never been plowed, but also some what we call reconstructed prairies that are planted often in CRP or former ag land. And we do tabling events where we meet with the public. Help landowners that are members to do their restoration on their properties and help them with technical support. We have a conference once a year, and we in the summer we do hikes and prairie hikes and try to educate people about the value of these prairies and the plants and animals that live there.
Great. Yeah, so that work, that preserving existing remnants of prairie that are really special ecologically, is a little bit different from what we're talking about today, isn't it? Which is
right. Trying
to introduce native plantings into settled areas where, so we don't have the hope of getting the kind of diversity that you might see out in a prairie remnant, right? But still has value in itself.
Right, absolutely. So those remnant prairies are kind of tell us what a prairie should look like, but then there's plants that are in those prairies that are very beautiful. And so native prairie nurseries have sprung up around the Midwest that raise those plants for sale to people who want to put them in their yard or even in larger plantings. But they have, you know, websites where they have pictures of these plants and they can show people what they look like. And so it's really, when I started planting those native plants in my yard, I was just amazed at the amount of, butterflies and native bees and moths that are attracted to those. Even damselflies are really interesting to look at. So it really increased my interest in the in my gardens. You know, they were more interesting to enjoy and look at in the summertime.
Yeah, so there's some really special relationships, right, between native plants and native insects, and so that's something that might interest people in trying to draw those pollinators and other insects into their yard.
Right, so there's so many different relationships, but of course flowers are dependent on bees, all different kinds of bees, and there's hundreds of different native bees in Wisconsin. Most people are familiar with honeybees, but they're actually not native to the United States, but they serve an important purpose from an agricultural standpoint. But The native plants need all different kinds of bees that have different lengths of their tongues and different sizes of bees, depending on what the flower looks like. And so when you plant those in your yard, you're going to start seeing some of those insects reappear. And unlike, you know, like certain kinds of grassland birds that need huge areas in order to live, you can get some rare, you know, insects in your yard. For example, there's a endangered bee, rusty-patched bumblebee, that will show up in people's yards.
Really? So if you get the right plants there, you may start to see some of these insects.
You could have an endangered bumblebee in your yard, which is kind of cool.
That would be really cool. And do people document if you get a rusty patch bumblebee in your yard? Is that something that you should be documenting and reporting to someone?
Sure. So there's a couple different ways you can do it. There's sort of the Bumblebee Brigade in Wisconsin, and you can get on their email and get notices from them, and they do trainings. But you can also just simply go out and take pictures with your phone, and you can submit it to something called iNaturalist, which is a citizen science database. It's very simple to use. And you can, on iNaturalist, you can document anything in your yard or out in nature, plants and animals that you can take a picture of. You have to have a picture in order to use it. And someone else will actually go online and identify it for you.
So
you don't have, you can post the thing and you don't need to know necessarily what species it is. But you're contributing to our knowledge of where certain plants and animals live.
Well, that could be a really fun way to get families involved.
It is,
out in the yard and getting some pictures.
Right. And they encourage you to, you know, take pictures of native things. They're not so interested in horticultural plants and things, but you know, they ferret those out too, so.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the other reasons people might be interested in incorporating natives into their yard?
There's something called a rain garden that you can create that, especially in larger cities where a lot of the land is covered with asphalt and concrete and things like that, it's really important to try to keep the rainfall from your yard in your yard and not have it run off as much as possible. And it's basically just kind of creating a big bowl in your yard when you connect your downspout, usually underground, to this kind of a little bowl-shaped depression in your yard. And then you can plant plants that are adapted and like to get wet periodically. And they're very beautiful. And so that's another way that you can prevent some runoff from your yard and create a nice little garden is called a rain garden. And you can look online and get lots of instructions on how to do that. And the Prairie seed companies also provide, you know, a set of seeds or plants that are suitable for that sort of a setting.
Now, compared to a lot of the non-native or cultivars that people generally are putting in their yards, native plants have special ability to absorb rainfall and runoff, don't they?
Right. The deep roots, that's one thing about prairie plants, is they have very deep roots because they have to be adapted to dry conditions. Grasslands, by definition, occurred on the landscape where it was quite dry, especially west of the Mississippi River. We're east of the Mississippi River, but still kind of in that area where it was a transition zone over time, where sometimes it was a prairie, sometimes it was a woodland, and kind of went back and forth. Those deep roots allow them to survive droughts, which can happen quite often in a grassland setting. And so that's one reason why they absorb a lot of water, is because they have those deep roots. And if you have a slope, you can plant a prairie on your slope, and those roots will protect the soil and keep erosion from occurring.
So not only are they slowing down water when we have these really big, heavy rainfall events like we just had, but they're also adaptable to dry periods, too. So that might actually help people to not have to be out there watering so much, right?
Exactly. Once you get a little prairie garden established, you don't water it. In fact, if you water it, you're just encouraging the weeds, because most of our weeds, they like fertilizer and they like water. And so with a prairie garden, if you're planting all native prairie plants, you won't need, once it's established, you won't need to water it or fertilize it. In fact, you don't want to do those things because you want to encourage the native plants to be thriving the way they normally would thrive. But I want to mention that you don't have to go entirely wild in your yard. I myself have a flower bed where I mix the horticultural plants with the native plants. And because I have certain horticultural plants that are really beautiful that I like, but they don't really provide a lot of habitat for the insects and plants and that I talked about, but I still like them, so I mix them. And so you can do that. You don't have to be a complete purist.
Well, that's good to hear, because it's hard for most of us to be a complete purist. And we have this idea of what a beautiful flower garden looks like, right? And yeah. A prairie, although it has colorful, beautiful flowers, it might not be exactly that image that some people think of when they right. think of beauty in their yard. Maybe right. you have to readjust your thinking a little bit to what that might look
right.
like.
Right. Yeah. I tell people, you have to kind of rethink beauty. Because a lot of people think of a flower garden as being, you know, clumps of plants separated by, you know, mulch and then another clump of plants. And you can start your prairie that way with plants and mulch. But over time, the seeds spread themselves. And over time, it will look more like what you might call a cottage garden. If you've seen pictures in magazines of cottage garden where the plants are all kind of jumbled together. That's what your prairie will look like after a little while, because some of the plants, you know, they seed themselves out. So they're not going to stay in those little clumps with, you know, mulch in between. So, you know, it's not going to look tidy forever. So you just have to sort of, the best thing I can recommend is go out and visit some local prairies so you can sort of see what they look like. And if that's really not your thing, then, you know, maybe a prairie, you know, maybe you might keep your little prairie garden very small.
Yeah.
But I still recommend planting a few native prairie plants someplace because of the benefit of getting more diversity in your yard and that you can enjoy.
Yeah. What about somebody that wants a tidy flower bed? Can they still get around that by maybe incorporating a coneflower here or, something native in amongst their flower beds?
Yeah, you can. But, you know, over time, they're going to seed themselves out. And so you would have to, you know, pull seedlings. One of the big things about a prairie garden is it really is less work in the long run because you don't have to weed it. You don't have to bring, you know, dig things to bring them in the fall. You don't have to water. So it's. It's a lot less work than a horticultural garden.
That's a big benefit.
Benefits. Yeah.
Yeah. So if somebody wanted to start a little prairie garden or a native planting in their yard, what steps should they take?
Well, first I would say you should kind of draw a picture of your yard, and you can get some graph paper, with the little squares on it in any, you know, place that sells paper of various types. And usually you use, like, one of those squares is 1 foot. You can sort of roughly sketch out where your house is and where your yard is. And then put in the big trees that you've got, the things that you, you know, have already got in your yard that you want to keep. And then sketch out where you might want to have your prairie garden. And if you do it on that graph paper, then you'll know how big your area is, and if you want to buy seeds or plants, you can tell the nursery that you're buying the things from how often to, you know, how much to buy. And generally, if you're buying plants, you want to put them about a foot apart, and that's kind of a rule of thumb. Of course, different plants are different, but and then you're going to need to know how many seeds to get, and the prairie. Seed companies will help you with that as well if you know how many square feet you have. So all you have to do is count up the squares.
Now, what about if you wanted to get a jump start and buy seedlings? Some of these companies actually will show you a suggested layout, right?
And that's right.
How?
Right, yeah. In fact, Prairie Moon has on their website, they've got a little maps of and suggested sets of plants for semi-shade, full shade, full sun, you know, is it wet, is it clay soil, all those kinds of things. Almost all the prairie seed companies have great websites. They're great. I use them all the time to look at certain plants and what, and also the height. One thing I do recommend is if you're going to have hardscaping, you know, like a path or, you know, a water fountain, you know, a water feature or something, you want to put that stuff in first before you want to plant or plan your garden. That's just a rule of thumb that you'd use for any kind of garden planning. And then you can, I recommend short plants, really, in a city lot. I think the mistake a lot of people make is they plant too many tall plants, and they flop over onto your path, and they just look kind of messy. So I would usually the seed companies will tell you how high the plants get, and I would try to choose short plants, and I think you'll be happier with those plants.
Now, a lot of people might be starting with just grass as their starting point. What's the easiest way for someone to convert their patch of grass into a native planting?
Yeah, that's a little bit tricky. So you can smother it with black plastic or some old carpeting or something like that. You can use an herbicide, glyphosate-based herbicide. That's probably the fastest way to do it. But you do want to try to kill the grass as much as possible. Some people actually dig out the sod and maybe amend the soil a little bit or something. So you do want to kill that grass, and you don't want to just stick your plants in and, you know, amongst the grass, or the grass will always compete with those plants, and, you know, you won't be happy with it.
Yeah.
So you have to, that's might be the toughest part, and it might require a couple of applications of glyphosate-based herbicide. And if you're going to smother it, you're going to need to smother it for, you know, a long time, a month, 6 weeks longer maybe.
I can share my experience. When I moved into my house in town, I used all my moving boxes and flattened them out and piled them onto the ground with mulch on top. And by the end of that, I guess it was a winter and into a spring that they were there, most of the weeds were gone. There were maybe a couple things I had to hand dig.
But right.
The
right.
cardboard really worked well and kind of broke down on its own, so there was nothing I had to get out of there afterward.
Yeah. The thing you especially want to get rid of is quackgrass, because it puts out runners, and it's just very difficult to eradicate once you've got other plants growing in there. So you really want to get rid of quackgrass if you've got any in, you know, where you're going to put your plants.
Yeah. Yeah. What other considerations should people be thinking about when choosing what to plant and where?
Well, you have to think about how much sun it gets. That's really important because some prairie plants are adapted to full sun and they don't like the shade. They're not going to do well in the shade. And conversely, some are adapted to shade or semi-shade, and they will do well in those kind of conditions. Some plants like it dry, others like it wet, others like it in between. So. And the type of soil that you have is important. Is it full? Is it sand? Is it clay? Is it sandy loam? Something in between. Clay soil is tough to plant things in. And again, most of the prairie seed companies will recommend certain plants for a clay substrate. Sandy soil is actually the best for a prairie because there's less competition from other weeds. The weeds don't like sandy, dry soil. But a sandy loam, which is what most people have, sort of a medium type of soil, is fine as well. So clay is probably the toughest thing to plant into, but not impossible. There are prairie plants that are adapted for that.
And when you go on the website of any of these nurseries or seed companies, they'll tell you what you need to know about each species and its requirements.
They have great websites. Yeah, they really do. So that's the best resource. And you can also call them, too. And if you need some personal advice, most of these seed companies have somebody that will answer the phone and answer your questions. And I really encourage people to buy from a certified, you know, seed Prairie Seed Company that specializes in that, as opposed to buying, say, a wildflower packet, you know, at your local hardware store or whatever. Those are fine if you just want to, you know, have some seeds in a small garden or something, but they're not going to, most of them are annuals. They might look pretty the first year, but they're not going to establish themselves as a native prairie garden. So you do want to buy from the reputable companies, and we have several of them in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Northeast Iowa to choose from.
Now, talking about planting native seed, a lot of native species need to be stratified, right? So they need a period of cold exposure before they're actually going to germinate. So if someone goes this spring and throws out native prairie seed, they're probably not going to get good germination, right? What should people be thinking about?
The best time to plant seeds is in the fall and late fall, and you know, before the first big snow. So if you prepared your soil, that's the best time to plant. In a small, you know, city yard, I would almost go with plants instead of seeds, because the seeds are going to take the first year. Your prairie seeds might be 1 or 2 inches tall and have 3 leaves. And they're sending down those deep roots. So the first year of seeds, you're not going to see very much. And in fact, a lot of times you need to plant like a cover crop with it or something to sort of keep the weeds out while the prairie plants are setting down those roots. So in a small area, I'd recommend buying plants instead of seeds. And there are also local growers, besides the big seed companies, there are quite a few local growers now that are growing native plants, and you can find them at farmers markets and other places, and you're supporting some local businesses doing that. So in the spring, then, you could buy plants and put those in. So if you want to plant this coming spring, I really recommend not going with seeds, but going with buying yourself some plants. And if you buy those plants and it's a small space, you're going to have immediate, you know, even this summer you might have pretty flowers, but certainly by next summer you'll have pretty flowers. So that would be, in a small space, that's what I recommend.
I can personally recommend, with my experience with Prairie Moon, ordering their seedling kits online was a really great experience, because everything came in the mail with a nice picture layout of how they recommended that you plant it. And it was a little bit of an investment, but that same season I had nice flowers. And so, yeah, Prairie Moon is really nice for the pre-designed kits.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the native seed companies to sell that too. There's Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin. Big, and they've, you know, in fact, the owner of that company just published a major book on prairie plants that you've probably heard about on the radio. I've heard several presentations recently on the radio about that. There's Shooting Star Native Seeds in Spring Grove, Minnesota. And Ion Exchange, it's down in Harper's Ferry, Iowa, and Prairie Moon. Those are the four that I've purchased things from because I live in Onalaska, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and getting plants regionally is probably a benefit, right, because they're adapted for these conditions?
Absolutely, yeah. You want to find the native seed companies that's closest to you, or you know, within 100 miles or 150 miles of where you're at, and their seeds are going to be local. I mean, not within 10 miles, but within the upper Midwest, I would say, and that's the seeds that you want. You don't want seeds from Texas or Montana, because they're adapted to different conditions. Sometimes they kind of go wild in your yard. They take over. They don't play well with the other members of the community. Whereas plants that are from this area, adapted to this area, they play well together with the other members of the community.
Well, what resources can you recommend for someone who wants to get involved or find ways to promote more native plantings in our area?
Well, you could join the Prairie Enthusiasts or any other the local conservation organizations. There's lots of them. You can go to seed swaps at, you know, the local areas. There's going to be Earth Day is coming up. A lot of communities have Earth Fairs. There's one in La Crosse. And there are all kinds of conservation organizations are represented at those places. They have all kinds of handouts. If you join any of them, you know, you're going to be able to learn a lot. There are some good books. I'll just mention a book by Talamy. His first name is escaping me.
Doug
Talamy. If you want to read some good books, his first book was Bringing Nature Home, and that's persuaded a lot of people to get excited about native plants. And his big thing is that we need to convert a lot of our lawns and non-native plantings back to native things, because they support all the other native animals that depend on those things. One thing about when I read that book some years back, he said, now go out in your yard and look for bite marks on your plants. And if you don't see any bite marks on your plants, you can pretty be sure that that plant is not providing any other habitat for any insect. If you go out and you see that there's little bite marks and holes in the leaves, that plant is probably a native plant, and it's adapted, some insect is using that. And, you know, normally you'd go out and say, well, I don't want to see any holes in my leaves of these plants. But so I did. I dropped the book. I ran outside. I looked. I'm going, oh, it's right, you know. These non-native, horticultural plants don't have any holes in them.
Yeah, and we actually have at least one of Doug Talamy's books for sale here in the VSN, the Valley Stewardship Office on Main Street, if anybody wants to come in and grab a copy. I love his writings and that concept of, you know, nature doesn't happen isolated away from us in preserves. It happens all around us, and that we can be actively promoting it.
Right. His recent books have been about oak trees and how valuable oak trees are for more than 500 species of moths and butterflies. So a lot of our moths and butterflies nectar on our flowers that are going to be in your yard, but they actually raise their caterpillars on trees and shrubs mainly. So our trees and shrubs are valuable as well.
And there's a direct correlation there between how many caterpillars a tree or shrub supports and how many birds will then be in your yard. So that's another whole topic we could get into, is supporting birds through native plantings.
Exactly, Most of our birds feed their babies caterpillars, because they're packets of, you know, fat and protein that is exactly what we need to raise those babies and get them out of the nest quicker, so that there's no predator that comes along and eats them.
Well, in our last minute here, I just want to make a plug that we do have a seed fund with Valley Stewardship Network. So if people want to donate directly toward getting native seeds purchased and on the landscape, that's one way that people can contribute, by contacting us through our website or come into the office or call us, and you can donate native seed, and we'll make sure that it gets out locally. Well, thanks, Melinda. It was so great to have you here in the studio today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. It was great. Thank you.